Ghoulish greetings, everyone. The tunes are courtesy of the lovely Bobby Mackey, and I, of course, am your host, Tessa Morrow.
Lord, I'm coming home. Open wide thine arms of love. Lord, I'm coming home.
Thanks for stopping by and making Paranormal Prowlers podcast part of your morning, day, evening, those crazy graveyard shift hours, whenever you listen and wherever you are listening from tiny remote village and small mountain town to big city and everything in between, it is greatly appreciated. This week's special city shoutouts go to Växjö, Sweden, Metropolis, Illinois, Martigue, France, Upper Marlboro, Maryland, Acton, California, and Dartmouth, Canada. Today we find ourselves in Indiana, and I am going to take you to two different locations. The first one takes us to Columbia City. The Whitley County Jail was also known as the Columbia City Jail, and it was constructed back in 1875, and it's a three-story brick structure. It not only served as the county jail, but also the sheriff's residence, making it super convenient to keep an eye on those inmates at all times. Well, most of the times. More on that later. Upon arrival, a blue sign welcomes people, and it reads this: Whitley County Jail, the first public building in Whitley County with a log jail built in 1840 on the southeast corner on what is now the Courthouse Square. That jail cost $490. It was burned in 1855 by a prisoner awaiting trial. A second two-story jail was built in 1855, costing $5,244 at the site of the present city hall. This jail and sheriff's residence was erected in 1875 and occupied in 1876 at a cost of $34,486. At that time, it was considered one of the best jails in Indiana and a credit to Whitley County, unquote. Okay, so let me throw some numbers your way. The first original structure that was made out of logs was built in 1840 for the cost of $490. Today, in 2024, that's equivalent to about $16,659. In 1855, the second structure is built for $5,244. Today, in 2024, that is equivalent to about $188,994. And finally, the most recent structure, the one that we see there today, and it served as the county jail and sheriff's residence, was built for $34,486. In 1876. Today, that's equivalent to about $1,010,562. Whew, a lot of numbers. One of the people to call Whitley County Jail home was Charles Butler. He was one mean son of a bitch. He was a complete and utter bully. He took the utmost pleasure in bullying and belittling others around him. And his family, they were not safe either. This includes his very own wife and his young son. He was also a drunk. And if you think Charles was mean sober, whew, forget about it. He got so much worse when he was under the influence. He would physically and verbally abuse his wife and child. Well, one day, back in 1883, Charles is in the middle of a violent meltdown. His wife, Abby, goes into protective mother bear mode, and she protects their child, pushing Charles out of the way. And while doing this, Charles sees red, and he shoots her in cold blood. Now, I'm not sure if she dies. Some accounts say she did, while others don't say anything about surviving or death. Charles is apprehended, and he is brought to Whitley Jail. One day in 1884, Sheriff Frank Allwyn is out enjoying a much-needed day with his family, and Butler, along with several other inmates, find this quite convenient and the perfect opportunity to escape. If the sheriff can go out and play, why can't these guys do the same thing? When Sheriff Allwyn hears about the escape, he is not only furious, but he is quite distraught. He's very disappointed. He felt that if he were there, this never would have happened. He posts a reward for $200 for the capture of Charles Butler. Now, mind you, this was back in 1884. Today, that's equivalent to 6,374 big ones. Nice payday for someone. Butler is eventually found in Ohio, recaptured, and he is brought back to Whitley Jail. He's put in front of a jury, found guilty, and he is handed the death sentence. On the day of his execution, Charles Butler walks over to the gallows, and something happens that would make executions, at least hangings, come to a complete and sudden stop. It's every executioner's worst nightmare, the notorious botched execution. The drop does not break this man's neck, and he just dangles there for several minutes, each one feeling longer than the last, I'm sure. And after 10 minutes, he finally loses consciousness, and he's pronounced dead a few moments later. Sheriff Allwyn, who was there that fateful day and witnesses the botched execution, never got over what he saw. And it kind of reminds me of Sam Quentin's Amos Lunt. Word is that this old jail has a handful of resident spirits. Charles Butler, who you just heard about his botched execution, he is believed to be one of them. Many who come here experience their cameras malfunctioning. Those who bring equipment to investigate may be disappointed with their batteries as they may drain quicker than Homer Simpson can drink a beer. Been there. It's very annoying when that happens. That's why I always come prepared and bring backup batteries for all of my equipment. Another spirit believed to haunt the old Whitley Jail is the sheriff himself, still keeping an eye on his jail and making sure that no one else tries to escape. Footsteps are often heard when no one else is around. And a door that he would often use will open all on its own. A handful of people shared their personal encounters on hauntedplaces.org. One individual went around a decade earlier and said that the structure itself didn't really give off any particular spooky vibes. That is until they entered the cellar. In their words, quote, "It smelled like blood and was extremely cold. The air was thick and it made me want to vomit," unquote. They end with saying they had a great time and that something is definitely haunting that location. Not someone, but something. One woman talks about how in October, during their haunted house time, she volunteers there, and how, especially on the third level, she will get an uneasy feeling. And at times, just like the person I talked about earlier, she suddenly gets the urge of wanting to throw up. That's the absolute worst. I've been there myself, and I really feel for her. This woman has also experienced feeling cold spots and hearing terrified sounds of screaming and disembodied footsteps. She does give a very useful piece of advice for those who plan to come for a visit. In her words, quote, "The owner does not allow recording devices in the jail, and if you do want to take pictures of the outside, please get permission first," unquote. And that's really good to know. A bit on the stricter side, unfortunately, it sounds like. Me, I am attached to my recorder. Whenever I go on an investigation, if I had to bring one tool, that's it. So I would be totally bummed out if I was told, hey, you're at this haunted location, but guess what? You can't use your recorder. Well, to each their own, I suppose. Many people have seen the apparition of Charles Butler, whose botched execution changed executions forever in the state of Indiana. One person has shared that they saw the apparition of the doomed soul, and he is a man who actually worked there, putting wiring throughout the building. He then went several years later with his son, and they both saw the apparition again. We now leave Whitley Jell in Columbia City and drive 2 hours to the Indiana Central State Hospital, located in Indianapolis. It's the very first state mental hospital in Indiana and is on Tibbs Avenue, Washington Street, Warman Avenue, and Vermont Street. In 1827, the Indiana legislature gives the green light for a hospital for the insane to be constructed. It's established finally in 1848 and once known as the Central Indiana Hospital for the Insane. But by 1925, it was renamed Central State Hospital. Their main goal was to treat patients that suffered from mental illness and different types of addictions. In many state hospitals and asylums, the patients were often referred to as moron, idiot, imbecile, but not here. The mentally handicapped were referred to simply as simple. By 1950, 2,500 people called the state hospital home, and rumors of neglect and abuse of every kind surfaces, like we see in so many other places like this, and it shuts down in 1994. A sign welcomes visitors, quote, Central State Hospital. Since hospital's opening, lack of funding and overstaffing led to patient abuse and neglect. Superintendent Dr. Fletcher attempted to rectify this and burned patient restraints in a bonfire in 1883. Groundbreaking pathology lab opened in 1896. Served as state teaching hospital. Renamed Central State Hospital in 1927. Closed in 1994 with the goal of community-based care. Now, as mentioned just seconds earlier, William Fletcher, he was disgusted with how patients were being treated. Death row inmates who've murdered multiple people were treated better. The doctor knew he had to do something. He had to be these people's voice. In a protest of his own, he burned covered cribs, mini prison cells for babies, if you will, restraint chairs, hundreds of straitjackets, and other things used on patients, inmates, whatever you want to call them. Perhaps most appropriate would be victims. He went on to do other great things. During his time here at the state hospital, he would hire several women, teach them basically everything he knew, and in 1888, he opens Fletcher's Sanatorium, becoming one of Indianapolis's very first private hospitals for treating nervous and mental conditions and diseases. And I imagine people here were treated a hell of a lot better than at the Central State Hospital. It's a shame not more of these types of places had more Dr. Fletchers around. The good doc with the heart of gold passes away sometime in 1907, and he's buried at Crown Hill Cemetery, which is only 6 miles away from the old state hospital. Indiana Central State Hospital has long since been believed to be haunted. During my research for this episode, nowhere did I see that this location is open or offering tours of any kind. Oddly enough, I haven't seen that it's private property either, and people, many, many, many people have not been shy about sharing online how they have come and explored the abandoned state hospital. I obviously would not do this, but to each their own, I suppose. I did find several experiences and encounters on haunted places and Indiana haunted houses as well. First, let's start off with haunted places. One woman shared a photo and titled it Selfie with a Ghost. It's a cute picture of a gal sticking out her tongue, a fellow is nearby smiling, and behind these two people, to the left, is an apparition. Perhaps a better word is shadow figure. Very cool stuff. Photographic evidence is always awesome, for sure. Now, another person shared that her father had worked there for well over 30 years. She shared something, in my opinion, quite interesting. Quote, "Many people don't know this, but there are tunnels running all underneath Central State, many going from one building to another, and my father knew them all. When Central State closed, my dad was put in charge of tearing down the cemetery, a job that bothered him for many years after." Unquote. Well, that sucks. That would bother me too. So much for resting in peace. Why not let the dead just lie where they are? One individual shared that their group of friends had been in the medical wing and they heard a sound, quote,
"resembling a flat line of a heart monitor. We investigated further to find no other people and no evidence of people being there recently,"
unquote. Now, there's two great examples here of why you shouldn't go into locations like this without permission. This is the final experience from Haunted Places. Now, mind you, this person was actually there doing a job, so it's not like they were trespassing. They just shared that they would go to inspect things as part of their job. And while it may have put out creepy vibes, this person never really experienced anything personally paranormal themselves. One thing they did deal with, though, were vandals. Again, in my opinion, vandals, squatters, whatever they are, they're way scarier than ghosts and ghouls. God only knows what they're capable of. Now, the rest of the encounters I'm going to talk about were shared on Indiana Haunted Houses. And this first one is another reason why maybe coming here is not the smartest of ideas. One person shared that they went with friends and went to do some exploring when suddenly they heard the sound of running. Now, mind you, it was far away at first, but the sound was getting closer and closer. Besides trash littering the ground, they also found a bunch of shotgun shells all over the place. It's kind of unnerving, don't you think? Well, they escaped from the window that they had snuck in from originally. Needless to say, it scared them. It scared me, shit. And they never came back. Now, someone shared that while walking in the area early one morning, like around 3 a.m., they heard a sound coming from the old hospital grounds. First, it was a laugh. Then it was followed by this horrible scream. This was on the road near the location, not on the actual ground. So you can still get a spooky experience, sometimes too spooky, without going in this particular location. Might not even have been paranormal, but vandals or squatters. Again, scary, just a different type of scary. One woman shared that in one of her photos, she captured an apparition of a woman in a hospital gown. She admits that this picture helped her firmly believe that the afterlife does in fact exist. One gentleman shared some intense moments and facts. He was not going to investigate the area or explore. He actually worked there. What I am about to read, this fellow gives a front row seat to some real eye-opening stuff. And I quote, "I worked at CSH back in the 80s. Beneath the hospital grounds were tunnels connecting the buildings. On several occasions, we would investigate noises in the tunnels, but never located the source or persons. An area near the pathology building in the tunnel were rooms closed with welded bars. You could see chains mounted to the rock walls where residents had been chained in the early years. Within the pathology building was a laboratory with human dissected brains in jars, rusted surgical tools, and saws. Some residents were allowed to walk the grounds a few hours a day, and some, they were confined. Yes, there were some very dangerous individuals there, and many with bizarre behavior. You never knew what you were going to see from one shift to the next. Oftentimes, you would have to disperse patients engaged in sexual activities throughout the grounds, subdue combative patients and suicidal patients. I've seen patients smearing feces on themselves, walls, or throwing feces on other residents or staff. Many were committed there and forgotten. Many died without much investigation into their death." Unquote. Very chilling to say the least. Another person shared that they had gone with friends and went down to the basement and they found things like old hospital beds and wheelchairs and what have you. At some point, they hear this really loud whistling and humming. It was, in their words, quote, super spine chilling, haven't gone back, unquote. Did you enjoy this week's episode? Listen to the others, they are all awesome. Haven't heard every single one yet? You can binge listen to your heart's fright and delight by checking out podcast platforms such as Blueberry, Spotify, Podcast Republic, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Downcast. Wherever you may roam to hear your other spooky podcasts, you'll probably find Paranormal Prowlers Podcast lurking in the background. Thanks, everyone, and
see you next week.